Freunde, bevor wir jetzt hier anfangen, noch mal ganz kurz ein Hinweis in eigener Sache. Wenn ihr in Zukunft plant, euch Tattoo-Equipment zuzulegen, kann ich euch wirklich nur ans Herz legen, guckt euch vorher einmal eben kurz unsere Webseite an, www.tftn-podcast.com. Da findet ihr unter dem Reiter Deals nämlich richtig viele geile Deals. In den meisten Fällen bekommt ihr 10%, zum Beispiel bei Coal Black Tattoo Supply, bei Cheyenne Professional Tattoo Equipment, bei Killer Ink Supply, bei Chaos Nero und bei Muro Star, just to name a few. Die Liste wird ständig erweitert, deswegen guckt vorher vorbei, www.tftn-podcast.com oder über die Shownotes. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Podcast. Bis später.
If your brand doesn't have a soul, if you don't understand that social media is a thing, or if you refuse to be in social media, and if you refuse that now you have to put in the work to see results, yeah, it's gonna be bad for you and it's gonna be tough.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to a new episode of the Tales from the Needle Tattoo Podcast. My name is Zephyr One. I'm tattooing. I interview people from the scene of tattooing, from the world of tattooing, artists and everybody in between. And today we get a very, very special guest here at the Gods of Ink Tattoo Convention in Frankfurt, and it's Gaston from FK Irons. Gaston, what's up?
How you doing, man? Good to be here in Frankfurt, and thank you for the invitation. So I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Oh, okay. Let's figure if I have any questions there.
Let's find out.
When have you landed in Frankfurt?
I've landed about a week ago, Sunday, yeah.
Okay, so, and then just business stuff going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, just been meeting with distributors and, you know, just like to come early, you know, adjust the jet lag and also visit some people.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to be fresh for the show.
You flew in from the States?
Yeah, from Miami, direct flight.
Okay, cool. You live in Miami?
I live in Miami, yeah. I've been living there for the past 30 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you are the boss of FK Irons, right?
Yeah. That's my company. I started in 2007.
Really? That's not too long ago.
Yeah, it's about what? Let's do the math. 2007, about what? 18 years, something like that.
Crazy. Yeah. And how come? Have you been a tattoo artist before?
Yeah, I actually used to run 3 tattoo shops in Miami as well.
Crazy.
Started tattooing when I was 15 years old. And actually, I started tattooing with a machine that I made myself, with a needle.
Yeah.
A needle and a big pen. And I strapped, you know, everything together. And my dad was an architect, so I have that Indian ink, and I just gave myself, you know, my first tattoo when I was 15.
Crazy. And so you did like the prison style, the rotaries at first, or do you did like the...
Actually, the first machine that I've done was like a hand and poke. And then, yeah, I messed around with rotaries, tried to build a couple of coil machines when I was maybe 17 years old. I failed miserably. And when I was 21, I actually migrated to the United States. And that's when I was really hungry. I only had $300 in my pocket. I spent it all in 1 week. And yeah, my background is actually graphic design, marketing, and photography.
Cool.
So I'm like, maybe, you know, I can go back to tattooing and take it more seriously. And that's what I did. You know, I started tattooing here and there. I'm self-taught because... In Argentina at that time, when I started tattooing, there was only one or two guys, you know, tattooing out of their homes. It was completely illegal. Oh, you couldn't get supplies. So yeah, most people tattooing, they were making their own machines, their own inks, their own needles and everything.
Ah, so you're Argentinian. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was born in Argentina.
Crazy.
Forget about the part.
Oh, okay. Such a beautiful country. I've never been there before, yeah. But of course you see like the Patagonia pictures and stuff.
Oh, it's very
like
nice.
That.
Very nice. Actually, my mother's side Argentinian, my dad is Sicilian.
Oh, okay.
So
best from both worlds.
That's why my last name.
And what's your, like when you have this big brand, how difficult is it to get the brand from starting to where you are now? So what was inside of the journey?
To be honest with you, I never planned to start a brand. Like I mentioned before, you know, I was tattooing, I got to own my own studios. And when I was tattooing for someone else in Miami, I remember, you know, I was tattooing with steel machine, very heavy machine, brass machine, some of those machines, you know, weighing 12 ounces, 11 ounces, like very heavy. And I was tattooing at a shop on Washington Avenue. Was a very busy shop, and you know, one tattoo after the other, you know, street shop, and tattooing for 5 straight hours, 7-8 hours some days, 10 hours with a 12-ounce machine, you know, you'll feel it really quick, the vibration, the weight of the machine. And I started developing like beginnings of carpal tunnel, and I was like, you know, these machines are too heavy. I got to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I decided to, you know, just, I went to a hardware store from America called Home Depot, and I bought, I bought a welder, I bought a hacksaw, I bought some steel, and I'm like, let me see if I can put something together that's a little bit lighter. And that was the beginning of FK Irons. You know, I built a machine for myself that was lighter, from 12 ounces to maybe 7.5. You know, that to me was very light.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on, I'm like, oh, let me see if I can make it lighter. Let me see if I can make it lighter. So I designed the first coil machines with a 1.5 coil, where the coil in the front was big and the one at the bottom was half of the size. That actually reduced the machine even further. And then I was welding those machines myself, you know, cutting them, welding them. So I taught myself how to weld, you know, and everything in my garage. And then I started doing conventions and I started showing people, you know, this few couple machines that I built. And at that time, you know, social media didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually visiting message boards and forums, and I would actually take pictures and post, hey, I make this machine. And sooner than later, you know, someone contacted me and was like, hey, can I buy a machine from you? I really like the look. I'm like, sure. So I built a machine for this person. Just to make a long story short, that's pretty much how I started, you know. And I started going to shows, tattooing at shows while selling my tattoo machines. Then I decided to make it out of aluminum, you know. And mm-hmm. at that time, there weren't a lot of aluminum machines. In fact, people hated aluminum machines because they vibrated a lot. So I'm like, let me see if I can make an aluminum machine now that is even lighter than steel machines. Knock off, you know, the vibration mm-hmm. and the weight. And I managed to make a machine very light. It was about 2.8 ounces. And that machine was called Pyro. It was a little tiny one inch coil machine, and it was great. And then I started traveling a lot. I remember one of the shows that I sold the most. I sold 45 machines in one day.
Crazy.
And at a show. By myself.
Built them by yourself.
By myself. I will build them by myself.
While tattooing full time.
While tattooing full time, in between breaks, I would have crazy hours. You know, I would actually work sometimes 16, 18 hours a day, bad. I gain weight, I develop high blood pressure, like very bad life.
Yeah.
Things that I actually got rid of right now. But yeah, I really put a lot of health at stake, I gotta say. Because I wanted to do everything.
Yeah.
I wanted to tattoo, I wanted to run the shops, I wanted to travel, I wanted to design the machines myself, I wanted to build them myself. I just put a lot of pressure on me, but again, you know, I didn't have a wife. I had a girlfriend, had a few, didn't have kids. So I just wanted to work. You know, my dad was an immigrant from Sicily that came in a boat and did exactly the same thing. So I didn't know anything better than just to grind.
Hmm.
That's what I've seen my dad. That's what I've seen my grandfather. So to me, that was normal.
But that's really, really cool. Like when you build something up from scratch, you know, you just come here and then you see how just how things develop, you know,
yeah.
Just to come over and say, yeah, okay, I got this machine, and also get it accepted by everybody. And it's also cool because when you are a part of the scene, I used to have this topic also with Lou in the podcast we did before, that it's quite not easy, but it's way easier if you are already a part of the scene to
sure.
get like your stance inside the scene.
Well, nobody knew me in this scene because I never consider myself an amazing artist. I consider myself a street shop artist. You know, I could actually, you know, I mean, I'm an artist because I'm a graphic designer, but I never, I think I always underestimated myself, you know, mm-hmm. my whole life. You know, I was like, ah, you know, I could do better. I'm never happy with anything I do. Like even now, oh, I can make this machine better. You know, I wasn't known in the industry. You know, I was not known in the industry. So it's not that the brand became the brand because, oh, this guy, you know, yeah, such yeah. a great tattoo artist. Nobody even knew me, you know.
I
got a lot of backs and a lot of cold shoulders, you know, in the beginning. But to be honest with you, I didn't care because I wasn't doing this because I wanted to make money. I was doing this mostly because I wanted to change, you know, the cumbersome experience that I had with machines. And by doing so, I discovered that there were a lot of people, you know, at the brink of exiting the industry. Some people have developed carpal tunnel, made a lot of artists that have multiple operations. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I created the aluminum line, a bunch of artists hated it because it was aluminum and they were, you know, calling this machine a bunch of, you know, names. But then there were a lot of artists that actually saved their career. You know, they're like, you know what? Because of you, and after all the multiple surgeries, I'm not able to hold the machine again.
Yeah.
So that to me inspired me, and I kept on pushing. And I'm like, how can I make it better? Then, you know, I make the first rotary machine that you could autoclave and so on. And at that time, what I would do is I would actually design the machines in 2D. I'm a graphic designer, and I hired an engineer to make them in 3D.
Cool. So you did something like a mock-up, like I wanted to...
I would do all the view and the mechanism, but I would draw it on paper, you know? So I would make 3D drawings, 2D drawings, just to explain exactly what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with this engineer. He was really good. He helped me develop the very first Halo machine. And we took 2 years to develop the machine. But he was a part-time engineer with me because he had a full-time job. So I have to wait on Saturdays to work with him. So it took forever. And then I'm like, you know what? I got to teach myself engineering. I can't wait like this, you know? And I figured that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, you know? So I took matters into my own hands, and I started watching videos on YouTube of how to use SolidWorks, which is the software that I use currently, you know, until right now. And, you know, pretty much every industrial designer uses that software or something similar. And in 3 months, every night after work, you know, studying for 3 hours, watching tons of videos, you know, I started making one part, making two part, three parts, sub-assembly, multiple assembly, a whole machine, you know. And yeah, and then I'm like, wow, I can now make a whole machine from start to finish. And that was pretty liberating to me.
And so afterwards, you found like contract manufacturers which produced the parts and then just set everything together. And then.
So I met this guy that used to make parts for motorcycles, pegs, and things like that in aluminum, you know, the throttle handle and things like that. And I'm like, hey, would you be able to, you know, make this machines for me? And he's like, yeah, I mean, I've never cut. They look complicated to him, but let's give it a try. So yeah, and you know, I met with this guy, and actually I went through several guys, but this is the first guy that was doing stuff for me. We did some stuff with this guy, then he didn't work, you know, then I worked with another person. But because my orders weren't that large for the volume that they wanted, you know, they wanted thousands and thousands and thousands, and I could maybe make hundreds at that time. I was, you know, I had a hard time with people taking me seriously for tattoo machines. And at that time, they never heard about anyone coming to their shop to develop a tattoo machine. You know, people would come with other things because honestly, machines have been unchanged for so many years. So that's when I decided, you know, to, well, maybe now that I'm an engineer, I have to kind of like figure it out how to start my own manufacturer. And that's what I did. I make a phone call, a few phone calls. I call a company, Haas, that's LCNC. And I'm like, hey, I'm interested in becoming a machinist, you know? I wanna buy this machine. I wanna learn how to operate these machines. And yeah, sure enough, the sales rep came to my shop, and I'm never gonna forget this story because he's like, hey, I'm looking for this tattoo machine manufacturer. Yeah, it's right here. So this is tattoo shop. Yeah, this is it. This is it.
You're talking to me.
Yeah, yeah, you're talking to me. He said, right here in the back in the little room, that's the manufacturer. He's like, no shit, 600 square feet. And so we actually made a deal with him and bought a machine. I remember $70,000, and I took a loan. And since the very beginning, every penny invested in the company, every single penny for many years until now. And so I bought a machine, and then I realized that with one machine, I cannot do anything because I can cut one part, two parts, or three parts. So, you know, now I need a lathe. So then I bought a lathe and I got in debt. I got a loan, you know, banks was lending me money. My tattoo shops were doing good. I had a little bit of money from my business because before that I was doing graphic design, like I mentioned before, websites and stuff like that. I had a kind of like an ad agency before that.
But it's cool because you can do most of the stuff by yourself, like the designing stuff,
everything.
The website, the graphic design, anything.
When I started, I created the logo, I created the brand, I created the website myself, I designed the product, I marketed, I built it, I went to the shows.
This is really cool, man.
Yeah, like I just couldn't afford to pay people to do those things, you know, because I wanted to do all those things, but I didn't have the money. So I learned a lot of the things to do it myself. And I always, you know, had good credit. In the United States, if you have good credit, it's a good thing. So banks were lending money and, you know, I was getting in debt, but I knew that if I had a responsibilities that I had to pay, I would figure a way out to make it work. And that's it's kind of like a little bit of, you know, the driver, because sometimes when people have the money and the means, they're like, oh, I'll try it out. And if it doesn't work, doesn't work. Well, I didn't have a chance for this not to work.
This is for me, like, I also own several businesses. So it's like the same attitude that you have. It's, it reminds me of the attitude that I need to have, because I'm not having like venture capital and stuff. You know, I just need to make it efficient from the first time. So I need to do everything lean. I need to rely on myself. I also have to have it profitable from the first time. You know, when you see all the startup businesses and stuff where just people are that are spending millions of dollars inside, and then afterwards you ask, yeah, and are you profitable? And they'd be like, profitable.
Yeah, when people say, oh yeah, we'll be profitable in 2-3 years, I'm like, damn, man, what do you mean? It was,
yeah,
you know, but again, you know, I guess, you know, I guess there are different models.
Definitely.
I, you know, when it comes to risk, I only take the risk that I can mitigate myself, and I like to rely on myself. So if I fail, it's gonna be my fault. I would hate to fail, and I, you know, and this happened to me. I'm not gonna say that I never fail. Building machines, pretty much, I, you know, to get it right once, I have to get it wrong like multiple times.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, I like to go gradually, and I like to do one thing to finance two things. You know. But when it came to the manufacturer, I mean, it was either me maybe disappearing from the industry or taking the big step and try to push innovation, you know, and I wanted to make the machine in the United States. That to me was very important to me, because, you know, I'm an immigrant, and, I felt that I could do this cause I'm here, you know? So, and now I'm going to go elsewhere. So to me, that to me meant a lot, you know, and it meant a lot to hire people. I, like, the first employees were a lot of people that were friends, you know, people that needed a job around me. And those were the first people, you know, like people that really wanted to work.
Pretty hard to find nowadays.
Pretty hard to find. You know, I never hired people with degrees. I don't care about your degree. I care what you want to learn now.
Passion.
Yeah, I care. If you don't know, it's okay. As long as you want to learn and we take some time to figure it out, if you're a fit, that's fine. But, you know, later in my career, you know, interviewing engineers and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, I did this work and here's my resume. I'm like, dude, put that resume away. You know, just what can you do? Let's go to the back. Come show me here on the computer. Show me some of your work. Oh, no, I can't show you anything because, you know, privacy, my customers. You're going to tell me that you have this big ass resume and you cannot show me any of your work? Next. Until you find, you know, humble people that say, look, I've done all these things and here are some of the products I built. And yeah, I understand this and this and that. So yeah, so with this business, I also got to read people's bullshit really quick,
mm-hmm.
within 1 minute into the conversation.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about business. I didn't know anything about hiring. I have to learn everything. And it's been a great experience so far, and I'm still learning every day.
Yeah, I guess so. Because, like, how big is your brand right now? So, how many employees do you have?
Well, right now we're an alliance of companies, you know. But before the alliance, we were 127 employees, wow. FKRNs. Now I think we are 500, maybe 600 between all the companies. Don't quote me on that because I don't go counting employees, but a bunch of people.
Average, approximate.
Yeah. So now, you know, FKRN is part of. Body or Alliance, which is, you know, companies, friend of mine decided to, you know, come together freaking, you know, push in the same direction rather than competing and, you know, be stronger, you know, by working together.
Have you stopped tattooing?
I'm not tattooing like I used to before. I used to tattoo every single day, including Sundays. But now I'm married, I have a family, I design products, I do conventions, I take care of my daughter. And now for me, tattooing is more of something, it's a privilege to me, you know, because obviously FK Iron takes most of my time. And, you know, the other time, of course, as well, you know, family is important. So I got to say that I've decided to spend more time with the family, because also as growing this thing and never seeing the finish line, I've neglected my family a little bit, you know. And when my daughter was born, now she is a human being, she's 5 and a half, you know. Now she calls me out, say, you know, finally I kind of like decided to settle and stop, you know, that never ending shift, you know, that wake up at 10 in the morning, 8 in the morning, 6 in the morning, and sometimes go to bed at 4, 5, and wake up. It's just, nah, I can't do that anymore, man. I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but again, I gotta be an example for the family, and I gotta be fresh, you know, now to respond to, you know, to our company and to the products. And as you've seen, this is not an industry of a couple of guys anymore. It's an industry of a bunch of people that have, you know, good ideas. Some have better ideas than others, and it takes a lot of effort, you know.
And it's also becoming like serious business, not like it used to be like 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. It's a serious business, and you know, I hear that artists, you know, are in the industry, and some distributors are complaining that it's a little bit saturated right now, right? The industry. And you know, a lot of people, I was having a conversation with an artist and a distributor today. And they were telling me that, oh man, you know, it's difficult right now and this and that. And to be honest with you, my outlook to the current economic situation in the tattoo industry, because it affects the artist and it affects supplier, is that we had it easy for so many years that we think that that's the way that every business works.
Yeah.
And every business doesn't work like that. It's the complete opposite. You know, and like I mentioned before, now, you know, having 18 years after having an understanding of economics, you know, because nobody does this for free.
No.
You're not going to be an artist just to do tattoos because you love art. you got to feed your family.
Yeah.
You know, so the problem is that right now we live in a world that if your brand doesn't have a soul, if you don't understand that social media is a thing, or if you refuse to be in social media, if you refuse to tap into, you know, influencers, whatever you want to call it, protein, whatever you want to call it, you know, and if you refuse, then now you have to put in the work to see results. Yeah, it's going to be bad for you and it's going to be tough, you know, but this industry was too easy for a while.
Yeah.
You know, like even artists, you know, like the big name artists, they would actually go to a show maybe even 5 years ago and sit around and charge whatever crazy money because they have lines and lines and, you know, years of booking.
It's not there anymore.
For some artists that have changed, you know? And yeah, of course, you know, more suppliers, more conventions, that's going to generate more demand. You know, there's almost a convention every single weekend of the day in every single part of the world.
Here in Germany, it's multiple.
Yeah.
This is why I said like the Gods of Ink is pretty well crowded, which is quite rare nowadays because, for example, I was in Milan in January.
And I was there
January.
Too.
Ah, okay, cool. Probably we met. And the week after in Paris also, Paris was crazy crowded. But you see, when you visit another convention here in Germany, for example, it's way less crowded than it is here, right?
I mean, this one is crazy because last year we were here at the first one. And this one is kind of like the biggest one I've been in so far.
Yeah.
I mean, so far in this couple of years after COVID. It's crazy. I also, you know, do conventions in Latin America. The last one that I went in Argentina was insane.
Yeah.
And they're doing it this year again. So I'm really well organized. Really well organized. It's kind of like in a place like this, probably a little bit larger.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big, big convention center. Really good. I was really impressed, you know, and I did that one for several years and now they're doing that one. But yeah, coming back to that, it's a different industry, you know, and for those artists that are having a, you know, hard time and, you know, suppliers, you know, don't give up. You know, this is how business is, you know. For example, the restaurant business, they work most restaurants on an 11% profit.
Yeah.
You know, and if people are not making four times their money, they're complaining.
Yeah, of course. It's just, I don't know, because when I started tattooing 2010 as a professional, it was way different than it used to be, because like you said, we didn't need marketing, anything. It was enough that you were a tattoo artist. People came your way. You didn't have to do anything.
You were like a god.
Yeah. And this is what when you talk to old artists, for example, that have been around for, let's say, 20, 25 years, some of them, okay, they gathered their crowd, but it's pretty hard for them to fit into the new era where things like you even mentioned, they are important. No.
Yeah.
Because it changed. The saturation is in the market right now.
Yes, and I think what's going to happen is that, and this turning to like kind of like tattoo economics type of conversation, but it's pretty good because not a lot of people are talking, so I'm happy that we're touching this topic. But what's going to happen too is that now we're going through the phase, in my opinion, of saturation. And the saturation is going to take care of itself of those people that are not going to last a long time.
Yeah.
And only those that really have great art, that really have good customer service. Because let's face it, before, you know, tattoo industry was a little bit hostile, right? You can you could tell, go fuck yourself someone yeah. and you would be a badass. And now you got to be careful, man. You get sued. You know, a lot of things, bad things that can happen. So, you know, this is also going to kind of like clean out a little bit as well of, you know, the post-COVID saturation, because I think COVID had a lot to do with this. A lot of people had a lot of time watching too many videos, too many YouTube videos, how-to videos. And also, you know, unfortunately, you know, there are going to be some suppliers and artists that are not going to be willing to put the work.
Yeah.
You know, there are going to be some suppliers that are not going to understand that they need an amazing website. There are going to be a lot of artists that don't understand that they have to push the work on Instagram. There are going to be a lot of artists that, you know, want to continue to work with substandard products. And to be honest with you, does the equipment make you a good artist? No. But having good equipment that you can rely on gives you a peace of mind. Or at least equipment that has a good warranty. So when it goes wrong, you can go and say, listen, you know, I need a replacement.
I think it's also the access to equipment right now, because like this is something that definitely changed. When I started tattooing, it was almost impossible if you haven't had a business, a registered business, to get professional equipment. And currently it's like, it's crazy easy to get like tattooing equipment, pretty good tattooing equipment.
Yeah.
And also because we have these plug and play machines, it's also the entry barrier into the scene is not that high as it used to be.
Correct. Yeah. And before, you know, I mean, and we got to say this, you know, before it was completely different. Like before we would only sell to, you know, and I'm talking about the industry, not only leaf care, but before we would only sell to professional artists, but now professional artists are kind of like, they get everything for free.
Yeah, true.
So if you go with that mentality and you don't support the newcomer, I think you are doing, you know, you're doing harm to the industry. Number one, they're going to get substandard products because of the charming new tattoo. It has been proven today. Look at all these artists. Half of these artists, more than half of these artists, they start on their own.
Yeah.
They get access to good seminars, they get access to good training, they get access to good, you know, even health classes, you know, and they've done it because some suppliers, you know, were catering for them. And I think that that's going to be the future right now. The future will be to pay attention to those that are starting so they can start the right way. Whereas before, if you're not a pro, we don't sell to you.
Yeah.
Well,
but how to become a pro, you know?
Exactly. Honestly, you know, we most of the sales that we do is to distributors, and we also have the front end. You know, FK Iron is kind of like a brand because of the price point of the machine. Most likely an entry level guy, you know, may feel a little bit intimidated of the price. You know, it may not need all the features yet, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, we created the FK1 machine, which is a machine right now that in terms of the dollar goes for $549, still made in the United States, still, you know, had the same battery capacity of a Flux. But it's a machine that an artist can start tattooing right now with, or and even a seasoned artist, but, you know, it has a little light that changes color as you go up and down. That's all you need, you know? I mean, a Koi machine did that, up and down, on and off. That machine does exactly the same thing for half of the price of an EXO. And, you know, we are paying attention to that, because if not, they're going to go and buy maybe a substandard machine on eBay. And since they're at it, they maybe are going to buy substandard ink. And when, you know, the next moment, they're giving someone some bad stuff, you know, in this game, because, oh, you know, I can just get everything from eBay and everything is fine. What we try to do is we try to educate people as well. You know, that's why we come to the show. We like to talk about the pigments, you know, world famous, you know, Permablend, FK Irons. And we tell people, okay, we have this machine, and then we have this other machine now, you know, so the choice is yours.
Yeah. How hard is it for you if you see, for example, products sold on Amazon, like product piracy and everything? How does this affect, like, for example, I think you do, if you're doing some research also on your own machines and stuff and see that people are stealing your designs, for example, how is it, what's that feeling, you know what I mean?
Well, at the beginning it was pretty pretty disheartening because, you know, you invent something when nobody has anything. We're talking about 18 years ago. And all of a sudden you see that product being done exactly the same thing and it costs a fraction of the cost. You can even make it for what they're selling it for. Yeah.
Because so they don't have the development cost.
Yeah. So it feels pretty shitty, I'm not gonna lie, you know. But they have copied us so many times that by the time they copied us, we were already working on the next version. So it's now, you know, it's now up to the copycatter. Do you want to continue to copy us? Or maybe now that you have all this capability, why don't you make something on your own, right? Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see some things, you know, coming from overseas. And to be honest with you, I mean, I can't say that everything that comes from overseas is bad like it used to, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
There is some stuff. Of course, you know, there is more interest in probably selling a machine, like they can sell you a dildo or toilet paper as long as they're making money, yeah. You know. But you know, so there's some products that are not too bad for people to start, you know. And I think that's good too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that fills in a gap that, you know, we can make a machine for $200. You know, we can't.
Yeah.
At least not in America, you know, or Germany. Yeah, you know, we're not. It's just the costs are now there, you know. They come in at a price point that some people, you know, are fine with that, and it's okay, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever they want to do.
What's your favorite part about your current job right now? So, because like you said, you used to do all the stuff on your own.
Yeah.
And then when was the tipping point that you said, okay, I can't do everything anymore. I can't do anything like this. We can't keep it like this. How are we going from there, and when did you find your passion for this, what you're doing now?
I think I found passion about building machine the first day that I cut a machine for myself. I'm like, this is a lot of fun. I know the machine is terrible, the first one I built, but I failed. Like, honestly, I want to wake up every day and do this, and never thought that I was going to do this and make a living out of it, because at that time I was running an ad agency out of my living room at the same time. I'll tell you about that part. So I found passion from the beginning. Now fast forward a bunch of years ago, and you know, we merged World War Famous, Painful Pleasures, Killer Inc. Also we own two body jewelry companies, Anatta Metal and Neo Metal in the States, and that's when aligning with companies allows you to put a global plan of management, right? Cool. Rather than me being the one behind everything, now between our partners, we can say, okay, we need to put some structure here, you know, combined we can afford it, you know, and what I do right now mainly is focus on innovation. I don't pick up the phone anymore like I used to. I like to come to some shows, but my main goal is to stay ahead on the innovation and try to, you know, come up with new ideas. That's what I do every day. Every day we are designing products, and only a fraction of what we create and we prototype makes it to the market. A lot of things don't make it to the market because they are too far-fetched. A lot of things, the industry is not ready. A lot of things are too expensive to make. So, you know, we always have to find a balance. And, you know, a lot of things are not profitable sometimes. So not every idea gets made and makes it to market, like I mentioned before. We gotta fail a lot to nail it.
And what's the process behind it? When did you decide what to produce and what to discard?
So that's the one thing that makes me want to continue making products at home, is because it's kind of like a giant lab, right?
Yeah.
So everything starts with an idea. I may start with a sketch, the typical sketch on the napkin. I may sometimes sit on the computer in SolidWorks and design basic mechanics or shape. Sometimes I may just design the machine from start to finish and do it myself. Now I'm doing it less now than I used to before, because that requires a lot of hours. So right now the best part is to be able to lead a team, you know, and kind of like being able to accomplish in much more efficient ways, with better sleep, you know, without taking blood pressure medication anymore, without overweight that I had before, with a stress, with a drinking, you know, with like, it's a lot better, you know, and being able to coach a team and to guide them. You know, I like to inspire them. You know, a lot of our engineers, I took them junior right out of the school.
Oh, really?
So cool. some of our engineers, FKRN was their first job, you know, and it still remained the main job. And they are the ones that are making the products that you see right now. You know, they are the ones that are taking, you know, some of my ideas or initial design and taking it to the finish line, you know. So, but again, I'm there with them all the time. You know, why? Because they're engineers, they're not tattoo artists. So there always has to be, you know, that feedback from the tattoo industry. And I tattoo with every machine I make.
Yeah.
Every machine I make, I will tattoo heavily. And that's when I start tattooing often. New machine, Gaston is tattooing. We're a bunch of people in the company. Someone is getting tattooed, and is getting tattooed for free. And is getting tattooed whatever they want or whatever I want. And yeah, and for a while, you know, we had a tagline, you know, testing humans. Because honestly, so it's the trial on people. Then it's the trial of electronics. We even have built electronic units and computer that can test a machine, fire a machine, run it, stop it, start it for days and months. Mm-hmm. And we would have 100 machine running connected to this computer, turning on and off, you know, and sometimes, you know, we discover that there is a malfunction in an electronic component and we got to go back, you know. And so it takes a long time for a product to come out. It's good to say that usually between a year and a half to 2 years for a product to be fully done. So for example, the Flux Max is a product that we started designing a year and a half before.
Okay. This is crazy fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Flux, actually, the Flux line, because the Flux Max, you know, was a lot easier, but the Flux, the wireless, and I'm talking about the mechanics, the wireless part actually came from a power supply that we designed. And then I'm like, how about if we shrink it, put a battery in, you know, because the Flux was the first commercial wireless machine. And so yeah, so now we have, you know, because this is not a video, I can show you something. I'll show you something that we're working on.
I will describe it to our viewers, if I might.
But this is the next thing that, you know, I'm working on. And when it's going to come out, I don't know. But as you can see.
Nice. Oh, it looks cool.
It's pretty good.
Can I describe it to our audience?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what we see here is like a wireless pen. And not only this, we only see a digital display there.
And you see no buttons.
I don't see any buttons. I'm really excited. What?
It doesn't have any buttons.
And how is it controlled?
And I have a prototype.
Oh, you have a prototype.
I say half a prototype here. So basically the way this is going to... this machine... Oh, look.
ASMR.
Yeah, ASMR. So the way this machine is going to work, so you go like that. In and out, and you're done, back in business.
Crazy.
With a complete different machine. And no more buttons. It may have wireless charging as well. So, I mean, again, this is again, who knows when you're going to see the product. But that's what's coming up right now. And this is what I'm working on right now at the present moment. And it looks fucking sick.
Yeah, it looks really futuristic, you know, like an Alienware computer, kind of.
You know that I was a creative director of Alienware, right?
Nah.
I was a creative director.
Really?
Yes, for it's a Miami company.
I didn't knew that.
Remember when Alienware made the black alien head?
Yeah.
That was my idea. Because it was, for real. It was white before.
Okay. Yeah. Then if you know this direction, you know where this shape
is. It looks like, there was a computer by Alienware called the Aurora.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it had like kind of like the gill. I've learned a lot there also working at Alienware because it was also a manufacturer. That was in my 20s. That was a manufacturer of computers for Miami.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I was always too poor to afford an Alienware computer, so...
It's a really good computer for gaming. I don't know now. I mean, I've been detached from that company, of course, many, many years ago, but they were the kings of gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great experience. Made a lot of good friends there.
Cool. But, yeah, it looks really nice. I'm really excited when it will come out. Yeah. And when we talked about this health stuff and everything, and I know that a lot of also tattoo artists grind a lot and they don't have this balance between healthiness and work because all they know, like you said, is grinding.
Yeah.
And what was the tipping point for you and how do you maintain like a very good life balance of the work life balance?
Right now, I limit myself with the amount of work that I want to put out. Mm. You know, and I can do that because, first of all, I'm not in my 20s anymore. I'll be 49 in a couple of days.
April you look way younger, man.
April 27th. Yeah, thank you. And second of all, you know, I have a 5.5-year-old daughter. I want to, you know, I want to be here for a while. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just want to enjoy life, man. I mean, life is not only about grinding. I mean, if you could do it, if you could find the balance, perfect. I just found the balance way into my life, you know. Again, I'm 49, I'm just finding the balance. You know, I had a couple of you know, situations, you know, no wife likes a husband that only works 24/7. So you gotta make some compromises, and you gotta choose, you know, just your company or the kids and the family. Of course, I choose the kids and the family, you know. So because of that, you know, I just try to limit myself about maybe 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, there's the occasional all-nighter if I have to pull it. But before, was every day was an all-nighter for many years. There was no balance before. Like, sleep for me was kind of like something that I did if I had time. And I ended up in the hospital many times too for that, because of that. I developed panic attack, chest pain. I thought I was gonna die so many times, and it was just because I was overwhelmed, you know, full of stress, and my body wasn't getting the rest. So, yeah, you know, a human being cannot function without proper balance. And I'm an example, because I develop a lot of freaking bad things and habits. Yeah.
Sometimes I think schedule is the key to everything, you know, because you have to maintain like 20% free time every day, you know. I try to do this, but it doesn't work pretty well. Because, like, if you know the deal, if you have some work to do, you're getting phone calls the whole time, you're tattooing, and then you have to, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Especially when you run a shop and everything. So I think this is pretty hard to get yourself, like, on the schedule. And I think, as you said, if you have a family that you take care of, it's way easier, because then you have a very good reason to do it for.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, work is important, but I think what's more important than work is to work smart. And that's something that I did not do at the beginning. You know, at the beginning, I just jumped, you know, into whatever. And a lot of the time, if I would do it right now, it would be completely different. It would be more planning, less stressing,
more efficient.
But again, I couldn't plan because I didn't know anything before. What am I gonna plan? You know, I mean, sometimes you gotta go through shit, to figure it out.
You know, this is where you learn.
That's the way I learn, you know. But, you know, an advice for people that wanna do something of their own is, because right now, you know, you have social media, you have a lot of things that you can watch on YouTube. Watch a bunch of YouTubes about becoming an entrepreneur. You know, watch a bunch of YouTube becoming more efficient with your time. Before, that didn't exist, you know.
Yeah.
But now there's not excuse to not be more, you know, polite and more organized and more disciplined with your work. Because honestly, you could learn anything. Like, honestly, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have gone to school.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I would actually spend my life watching YouTube videos about engineering.
Yeah.
Because, you know, honestly. So right now, like I mentioned before, if you're complaining, I may understand that may be hard for some people, but the main thing is that please look around. It has never been this easier to learn and to...
It's just a click away.
To better yourself. Just use the tools that are out there. Yeah. You know, there are a bunch of people now hating AI. You can hate AI, or you can embrace it and become part of the evolution when AI rules your
life. It won't go away.
Won't go away, just like the internet. You can hate the internet. You can hate cell phones.
Or you can use it.
Or you can use and stay connected and, you know, do business. I mean, we do business on our cell phones, you know. And back then, people said, fuck this. I'm not going to carry this in my phone and charging every day. Who needs this shit? Well, my man, if you don't have a cell phone with you, most likely you're not paying your bills.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think about the artificial intelligence, how it will affect, like, also the tattoo industry in the next couple of years?
So I am a huge advocate of artificial intelligence, and I use it in many, 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 many ways.
Oh, ChatGPT saved my life.
Listen, not only ChatGPT, also I use some because, you know, I have a YouTube channel about my photography. Photography now takes big part of my life. Something that we didn't talk about it, but I leverage a lot to help me with my edits. Of my videos. I leverage a lot to plan better, like I mentioned before. That's what I'm saying. I leverage a lot to find strategies. I leverage a lot to even come up with designs. Like, one of the things that I've learned to do with ChatGPT is to train ChatGPT to understand a little bit about your interests, what you want, where you want to get, what you're trying to accomplish. So I kind of created a model that in ChatGPT that I can refer to that kind of like has a little bit of what's in my head. Mm-hmm. So if I want to design maybe something, a feature, I may prompt a couple of things.
Yeah.
Based on prior information that I have fed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times, I get, oh, wow, I didn't think about that, you know. But the one thing is that I do not use ChatGPT to do the job for me.
No.
I use it as a tool to enable me to accomplish my goal. You know what I'm saying? There is no ChatGPT design yet, and probably there will be. I mean, I can see a day where I can actually prompt the computer the features of a design, and I will get a 3D model. Hey, in a diameter, this thing, this length, do this. Yeah, that's coming for sure.
Give me like 20 different variations.
Yeah, you won't have to like now. The future of, and that's why people should actually embrace the technology, because I think that the best designers are going to be great prompters.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, now what do I think about people using AI to create tattoos? I think that kind of like if it works for you, fine. But do you want to? Would you call yourself an artist if a computer is doing the art for you? I don't know.
Depends. So this is also the question when you're doing realistic, for example, right? So most of the artists back in the days, like 3-4 years ago, used Pinterest, for example, to get like a lion reference. We all did the lion reference, the three that are available that look great, like mm-hmm. tons of times,
Yeah.
Nowadays, if you are too lazy to just do a prompt and get yourself like a unique picture out of the ChatGPT. This is pretty nice because I'll get my reference there, but I will do the design job and working this out like by myself.
Yeah.
So this is where I would say I would consider myself to be an artist. For example, if you are doing the photographs of your references by yourself, it's also mm-hmm. artistry. The transfer to the skin is probably then more craft.
Yeah.
But I think, it depends on how you...
Most of my tattoos have been black and gray. I mean, I can show you some of my stuff here. I drew pretty much everything. But if it was a portrait, I would trace it. And which is kind of like copying too, right? Like if you do a portrait, I mean, there's not much imagination when it comes to the... it needs to look like, right? It needs to look exactly like the reference. But... but again, yes, like I mentioned before, if it works for you, more power to you. So this is from many, many years ago.
Dude, this is great. Cool.
Yeah, so that's Coin Machine, all this stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So, if it works, I see some tattoos right now that I can't believe that that's a tattoo, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
especially here.
Yeah, so today it was kind of like a little bit the opposite before. You have to be a great artist, and kind of like the rendition was a little bit flat, a little bit kind of like the same from shop to shop, mm-hmm. Like for example, American traditional tattoo, bold line, colored in, and maybe where the creativity was in creating, this line work, that's where most of the time went, because then you would actually go and pack the red, pack the blues and slap some black, And now it's kind of like a little bit more, it's different. Now artists feel that, let me actually use a computer or all these tools that I have, ChatGPT, create an amazing fucking image that I don't know how I'm going to do it. And it's all about the execution.
Yeah.
And that is like, how in the hell this guy managed to make a tattoo look like that on skin?
Yeah.
With needles, ink, and it's just, I can't believe it. But, it just kind of like flipped. Now it's all about the execution and the technicality in laying the pigment on the ink. Whereas before, I think it was more of, and again, I mean, I there's a lot of artistry, and I prefer to carry on me Japanese traditional tattoo until today. I don't want to have, a Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
that's not my thing, but there are people that love it and I have nothing against, but I do love traditional tattooing, you know, and, you know, but when you see, you know, traditional tattooing, it was more all about creating that masterpiece on paper first, you know, that got transferred to the skin and not necessarily had to have, you know, a lot of gradation, a lot of color. Sometimes it was black and red, sometimes black and red and yellow, and it still looked amazing. Whereas before, if you are going to trace a picture from ChatGPT or Midjourney, whatever, put it on people's skin and you're just going to do a couple. Now it's all about executing the realism and making the tattoo come out of the skin.
And the funny thing is also when we talk about artificial intelligence, my opinion was at first that the craft itself will be done by a machine before the design process is done by an artificial intelligence. But nowadays it's different, it's the other way around. So what do you think as a machine manufacturer, how far away are we from tattooing robots, where you just, you know, you have probably, you are a designer, you just feed in your design and the machine does the tattooing for you.
All right, we are probably a few lines of codes away, and I'll tell you why. You know, at FKR, we have some machines that do some robotic automation to, like, for example,
these,
like,
arms,
pick,
I don't know,
yeah, so pick something from here to put it there. As long as I can program the arm to do whatever, it will repeat it.
Yeah,
it won't fail, and it will do it exactly the same thing. I could even use my own motion of my own hand to replicate the motion. Now, it's a matter of, will the customer, you know, stay still exactly the same thing, right? Yeah. So, again, I think that it is a few lines of codes away, like I mentioned before. But I don't know. Would you want to pay for a tattoo done by a robot? Maybe not today, but maybe yes tomorrow. Who knows? You know, we would have never thought 20 years ago that we would actually put letters and trace a reference, and we say, now fuck that, you know, I'm quitting. But if you want to be an artist, that, look, go out.
Yeah.
All realism, a lot of realism, a lot of, you know, crazy stuff. Even, you know, people that do you know, amazing, you know, fine line work or that very intricate kaleidoscope type of thing. They also use computer to create that and repeat. Some people do it by hand, you know, great. But end of the day, you know, if this is feeding your family, I guess you're just going to do what you're going to have to do, you know?
Yeah.
To be successful and, you know, and prevail.
Sometimes I think it's just that most of the people that just want to do a tattoo, you know, that they will probably go for these robot tattoos because they don't care about tattooing, they don't care about the artistry, they just want the tattoo. But it will add value to the ones that are staying, that are artists. And this matches up to what you said earlier, that, like, the artistry is this right. What survives.
I think we're losing a little bit of the artistry, in my opinion. But I don't know, man. Because
you think so? I think it's getting more diverse also in styles.
But it all depends how you're looking at it. If a person comes and says, yeah, just slap on me that ChatGPT design or Midjourney, I don't think you're going for a custom piece. You're just going for wow factor.
Yeah.
Whereas my back piece that was designed in conjunction with Johan Finney from Sweden, I sat with them. You know, we were great friends. We are still great friends. We sat down together. We planned. We designed. And I'm like, I have this vision, and I know your work, and we collaborated together. You know, I could have, you know, let him do the tattoo, but he actually, because he worked with my machines, it was a surprise. Hey, let's collaborate to do my back. Hell yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And to me, it was a great experience. You know, like, my whole back. He did my whole back, and he flew to Miami, I flew to Sweden. I actually did a guest spot in his shop. I've learned a lot from him, tattooing next to him. I mean, again, to me, was all about the creation of my piece, and it was an experience. It was, hey, I want something, just figure it out what the computer gives you. To me, it was different, you know? But again, that's me. And that's me many years ago. I don't know, if I would be a 20-year-old today, my mind, I'm sure, will be completely different, right?
Probably, yeah.
Kind of like my dad's mind is different, and my grandfather's mind was different, you know? Sometimes we are just a reflection of kind of like what we saw as we were growing. And I didn't see none of this shit growing. I'm seeing it right now. So it's kind of like hard to accept, but for my daughter, this is going to be every day's life.
Yeah.
You know? Normal.
We were raised in a time where we haven't had cell phones and stuff. We used to call, you know, when we Beavers. Wanted to meet our friends.
Yeah. I mean, that was amazing. Like, imagine, like, in the 80s, no cell phones, no internet. It was amazing.
I was born 89, so I don't remember that much. But
but it was amazing, man. I mean, you would actually connect more with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also cool to be like a part of this development of tattooing, also to see where it came from in just these. I mean, I'm tattooing for 14 years now, and it's great. It's has changed 180 degrees. Yeah. So crazy. So what's the next big step for FK Irons, the next big goal?
So the next big goal for us, I don't know. I think, you know, I think we are up to the next big thing right now. There are several things that we're working on, and it's not necessarily machines.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I can tell you is that we are watching what's going on. You know, we are very much aware. And I think, you know, we still are one of the few companies that still can hold a tattoo machine and do tattoos. You know, I do it at and I'm going to continue to come to conventions, continue to absorb, continue to interact with artists, and try to find opportunities to provide artists with better tools before they even know that they need those tools. And that's, I think, what I've done, you know, from the beginning. There were people complaining about heavy machines, but nobody knew that maybe they could actually tattoo with a lighter machine, or, you know, rotary machines were mocked for the longest.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, I haven't heard a single coin machine at this show, right?
Probably the Dan Cuban, but that's it.
So, yeah, so it's going to be like continuing to push boundaries. You know, like this machine that I just showed you, there's nothing like that on the market.
Yeah.
No? Yes, you have seen a demo how it works. There's nothing like that. And again, I didn't know that I was going to come to this point maybe 3 years ago. And I don't know what's going to be in my head, you know, 2 years from now. So, like I mentioned before, you know, we work on like a couple of years in advance to kind of like forecast what we need in the future. So I think that we are working already on what's coming next, but it's not going to be only tattoo machines anymore.
Okay, I'm really excited to hear about this. So we almost got a full hour of talking. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. It's tradition in our podcast that a guest has the last word, whatever you want to say. Like greet somebody, your Instagram handles, whatever, or your photography, which is pretty amazing, by the way.
Oh, thank you. So I have a photography Instagram where I share some of my photos. It's Gaston Shutters on Instagram. That's also my YouTube channel. But the one last thing that I want to say to people, leverage the tools that you have at your disposal. You have it better than anyone else had it a couple of years ago. So don't be lazy. Don't complain. Go and put the work.
Dude, that's perfect. Thank you so much for being here.
There you go, man. Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Ich hoffe, dass es euch Spaß gemacht hat. Ich hoffe, dass ihr euch gut unterhalten gefühlt habt und ein bisschen was mitnehmen konntet. Wenn ihr Rückfragen zu gewissen Themen habt, was auch immer, lasst es uns gerne wissen. Ansonsten würden wir uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr uns bei den gängigen Streaming-Portalen bewerten würdet. Erzählt auch gerne euren Freunden davon über einen Shoutout auf Instagram und anderen Social-Media-Kanälen. Freuen wir uns natürlich auch immer. Support ist kein Mord. Denkt dran. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Wir hören uns nächste Woche wieder bei Tales from the Needle. Vielen Dank. Ciao.